Hey everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, episode number 46. There's a podcast brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy, the editor-in-chief of Tuesday Night Movies, and with me as always is Dave.
Yes, back and married.
Yes, congratulations on your wedding.
Thank you.
And on your honeymoon. As anyone who listened last week knows, I enlisted one of your groomsmen to fill in for you.
Right, my longtime friend Ali. We went and had many adventures at the comic book store and beyond.
And beyond.
As kids.
Yeah, that's awesome. It was cool because it was fun to, one, get a new voice on the podcast, which, you know, just brings in a new dynamic. But also, since he grew up as your friend, it was interesting because, you know, he had, like, Dave stories to tell.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's true.
Nothing embarrassing, just, like, you know, knowing you as a comic fan growing up. And he talks about how you were the one who got him into DC Comics in the 90s.
Right. I think I was pointing out, I remember, actually, when we were talking about that, like, everybody was like, yeah, Marvel. I'm like, Marvel sucks right now. I was like, as opposed to, like, a couple of books. And I was like, you know, I think he was reading Preacher at the time.
Right.
I was like, and then I pointed out how many, like, great books came out from DC, which are, like, game changers in the comic industry at the time. And, like, I was like, they all come from DC. All your, like, your points of, like, oh, man, this is what changed comics.
Right.
And so I was, so that's, that. I think that's where, I think he was, what he was remembering. Because I kind of remember doing that. I think Marvel changed its quality quickly after Quesada started.
That's true. Well, basically, once Marvel Knights started and took off to both critical and commercial success, Joe Quesada was quickly promoted to not just running that line, but running the whole company. And that's when we got the Ultimate Universe. That's when Grant Morrison was brought in to write X-Men.
Right.
That's when a lot of big things happened, was when Joe was, it was basically a changing of the guard at Marvel.
Right, yeah, and it was funny. I was just listening to an interview with Brian K. Vaughan, and he was talking about his early works, and he was talking about a script he did for Marvel, and he said that Marvel at some points was like just churning out books so quickly that they would have a writer plot the books, then they would have an artist draw the books, and then a different writer write the dialogue in the books. So he was like playing like Mad Libs or like create your own adventure with these this art that he got back. And so I think, you know, a lot of that kind of was shining through in some of the quality of the work back then when that's how you created a book.
Yeah, it's interesting how much it's shifted from like the Marvel method to the full script method.
Right. Yeah. It was a quick change, I think.
Yeah, because it seems everybody does full. Like very few people work what's known as the Marvel method, even at Marvel. And it might be also because a lot of writers are coming in from film and television and are used to writing screenplays.
Right. I think when you listen to writers talk about working with artists, they develop a relationship with them, and they're like, you know, they send over a script, but they also have a conversation with them, you know, where they're like, hey, if you want to change this, if you have any ideas, throw them my way, do it how you want to do it. You know, so they tailor the scripts to them, and there's a back and forth. So, you know, it kind of incorporates the Marvel method, maybe verbally, maybe not exactly on the paper, but, you know, I think there's more of a give and take than, you know, what you might think, you know, like, they're not all Alan Moore scripts coming in.
Gotcha. Yeah. So let's talk about some new comics that are coming out this Wednesday, which is Wednesday, November 19th, 2014. And it's a heavy DC week for me this week, Dave.
Me too.
And not only heavy DC, like heavy Batman. I'm just looking through a lot of it. I'm guessing Batman will be in all but one of the DC books I'm buying, and it might be in the last one too. and we can start with the last one, and that's Multiversity Pax Americana number one.
Yeah.
We've got Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, and that's really all I need. I don't need to know anything else about the book.
You're in.
Yeah, really, that's it. Like, I'm in. Sure, whatever you guys want to do, I will buy it.
Right.
And it looks like, so this is the quality Earth? Is that what the question and Blue Beetle are?
Right, so this is kind of like a mashup between Watchmen and the quality Earth.
Hmm.
If readers are familiar, Watchmen, all the characters in there, Alan Moore based them off of quality characters that DC had bought from quality comics, such as Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, Peacemaker, Nightshade, and another guy. the Question and
Rorschach
is the question. Yeah. So I think.
So who is Peacemaker? Is that comedian?
Yes.
Okay. I never made that connection. Oh, that's interesting.
In here, they're doing a play off of the smiley face cover. Instead of having a smiley face cover, we're seeing a peace symbol.
That's on fire, or is it? It's not leaves falling down. It looks like it's on fire, right?
It looks like it's on fire. Yeah, I would guess that it's on fire. So it should be a good issue here. I think Grant Morrison said they're going to do it in the style of Watchmen, so like that same rigid grid.
Like nine panels per page kind of thing?
That's... Right, right. And that it's going to be very symmetrical in its design and storytelling, much like Watchmen was. So I'm very interested to see how this issue plays out, because I'm sure it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool, because with the other Multiversity issues, it's not like he picked an era and said, we're going to make it like this. You know, it's not like he said, oh, we're going to make this look like a Golden Age book, or we're going to make this look like a Silver Age book.
Right. Well, I mean, in this the last issue, I really felt like they really paid homage to the 90s Earth.
Mm.
Or like a 90s Earth with all the youthful characters. You saw the Bloodline characters.
Right, but without like the terrible art that signified like DC Comics in the 90s.
Right. You had some nice art in there.
And, yeah, like and like nobody had like massive ponytails, and every page wasn't a splash page.
True, and I didn't see a lot of like leg belts.
Yeah, that's true too, or oversized guns, or pouches.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm really excited for this, and this is probably the first comic I'm going to read this week, without a doubt.
Me too.
And the second comic, also not related to the main DC Earth, is Batman 66, The Lost Episode number one. So this is scripted by Len Wein, but based off of a TV episode outline that Harlan Ellison wrote back in the 60s for the Batman television show starring Adam West.
Right, I think another company might have done a similar thing with a Harlan Ellison Star Trek episode.
Yes, it was City on the Edge of Forever, I believe is the name of the episode.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And IDW recently put that out as a miniseries. An interesting thing about that was Harlan Ellison donated a page of the art from that to the New York Comic Con charity auction. And the art was done by the same guy who did the art on Star Trek, The Next Generation, meets Doctor Who, J.K. Woodward.
Oh.
I know you're not a fan, but this is a cool story, whether or not you're a fan of J.K. Woodward. Harlan Ellison had a page of it, or maybe J.K. Woodward donated the page, but Harlan Ellison signed it, and he basically inscribed it to whoever, you know, won the auction.
Mm-hmm.
And said, like, this comic was 40 or 50 years in the making, which was cool. Very cool, and two Star Trek fans went into a heavy bidding war over it. But then, like, 2 days later is when it was revealed Harlan Ellison just had a stroke.
Wow.
Which was, like, crazy. It's like, wow, then all of a sudden this becomes, like, crazy collectible. I'm not trying to profit off malfortune, but it's just
right.
The timing of it was just uncanny.
Right. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, and Harlan Ellison apparently has written a lot of TV episodes that were never made. And this sounds like an awesome episode because this would have introduced Two-Face to the Batman TV show.
Yeah, and it's really shocking that Two-Face wasn't on there because they were like mining all of Batman's villains, and you know, Two-Face seemed like a no-brainer.
Yeah. What's also cool about this issue is that it's got a very pop art looking cover by Alex Ross, I believe, and Two-Face is like, you know, monster side is that he's sitting on a couch and that side of the room is just covered in like splatters of paint. Because he's not, this isn't a show that had like murderers on it, you know, everybody, like all the criminals were dangerous, but in a fun way.
Right.
Yeah, and everything about this issue says, like, buy me, Billy, because the art's by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez.
Oh, man.
So, I think this is definitely going to be, and I believe this is not going to be a miniseries like Batman Meets the Green Hornet. This is, like, a special oversized issue, because it is $10. Yeah.
Wow.
So, if it's $10, I'm expecting this to be, like, an 80-page story.
Yeah.
If it's anything less than an 80-page story, I will not be buying it because now they just saw the price.
Do you know who they're basing Harvey Dent off a actor from that period?
It's funny that you say that because I was wondering the exact same thing, and I don't know the episode. I don't know the answer to that. Like I'm looking at the cover, and it doesn't. Like it kind of looks like Cary Grant, but I don't know if they're actually basing it off somebody specific, because I don't think this episode may not have gone so far as to ever even been considered for like casting someone.
Right.
But and another cool thing about it is that it's going to include Ellison's original prose story outline and the complete original pencils by Garcia Lopez. Now that kind of makes me think that this might be 80 pages, but it's going to be maybe 30 pages of story and then like 40 pages of, you know, Harlan Ellison's outline and then the pencils of the book you just read.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah. Which I like, don't get me wrong, I love original art. I just like, I'd rather have an 80 page story than 30 pages of the 30 page pencils. I just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I've just been spoiled by IDW's artist editions where I'm like, okay, I don't need to see the original pencils comic sized. I want to see them artboard sized. Yeah. So, yeah, $10. Now, Dave, before we start the show, you were talking about how you're keeping yourself to a budget. So this might be like a break the bank kind of issue here.
Yeah, that's going to be – I don't know. it's tough.
Yeah, this might be a wait for like a Batman 66 sale.
Right.
Which I'd say would come around the time of the DVD launch, except that didn't happen because the whole series came out on Blu-ray last week.
Right. You know, a lot of times DC does like 99 cent sales on their digital comics, such as Batman 66.
Right.
They're all 99 cents. But guess what? They're 99 cents normally. So it's kind of like they should be 50 cents each.
They're actually not anymore. DC has raised the price of a lot of their digital books. I know Batman, at least. Batman 66 is $1.99 now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if that's true for Injustice, but it is definitely true for Batman 66. They charge $1.99. It looks like Injustice is still 99 cents. I just looked it up really quick.
Oh, maybe it has something to do with page count.
Yeah, the last time I went to buy a Batman 66 book, I was surprised that it was $1.99. I was like,
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, it looks like they're all $1.99. And the same with the Bat mangas are $1.99 too.
Right. For DC, I also wanted to bring up another book, Superman Wonder Woman number 13. This brings on the new creative team of Peter Tomasi and Doug Bahnke.
I love that creative theme, but there's no Batman in it. I'm not interested in this week. I'm on a theme this week.
So it looks pretty cool. I mean, I had not been reading Superman Wonder Woman, and I think I don't really care for Tony Daniels' art, and that's who was the artist on this, but I love Peter J. Tomasi. I love Doug, is it Monk or Monkey?
I believe it's Monkey.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's Monkey. But yeah, I agree with you. That's one of my top two favorite artists at DC right now, and one of the easily top five favorite writers at DC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but Peter Tomasi consistently puts out good stuff.
And he's got another book coming out this week.
Does he? What's his other book? Is that Batman and Robin, right?
Right.
Which,
right.
In my opinion, is the coolest cover of this week.
Oh, yeah. With all the Robin costumes?
Yeah, so Damian is back. I have not been following Robin Rises, so I don't know the story in that. I do know Robin Rises Omega recently came out, which I believe resurrected Damian. But yeah, so we've got Batgirl in a Robin costume, the Red in a Robin costume, and Damian in his Robin costume. And Batman in the background. So, but this cover has sold me on this issue.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, and the creative team of, again, Tomasi, Patrick Gleason, I don't read this book regularly. I'm sure I'm missing out, because whenever I read a book written by them, I'm always like, well, why don't I pick this up monthly?
Right, they're like the quiet, awesome book that nobody reads.
It's true. And it was the same with, like, Green Lantern Corps. Like, Green Lantern Corps was always great when they were on it. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. And then I'll read, like, a whole trade of it. I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. Why don't I buy this?
Right, right.
And I don't actually know the answer to that. Yeah. I'm just, like, just checking out this cover. I, like, man, if I could buy the original art to this cover, I would totally buy the original art to this cover.
Yeah, it's pretty gorgeous. As well as just cool visually, with all the Robin costumes. If anybody's a fan of the Earth One books, Jeff Lemire and Terry Dodson are bringing out their Teen Titans Earth One this week.
Oh, that's this week? I've been so excited for that to come out.
Yeah, that's this week. And they're because the idea behind Earth One is that there is no continuity between books. Right. So, like, there's continuity between Superman Earth 1 Book 1 and Book 2, but there's no continuity between Superman Earth 1 and Batman Earth 1. And so because of that, Jeff Lemire decided to take away any sidekicks in the Teen Titans, because if there was a Robin in it, you'd have to explain that with Batman.
Right.
If there's a Superboy, Supergirl, Wonder, or a Wonder Girl, or anything like that. So, so he stuck with the classic Marv Wolfman, George Perez Titans, minus all the sidekicks. So we're having a Beast Boy as Changeling in here. We've got Jericho, and we have Cyborg, Wonder Girl, Raven, and Starfire.
I'm psyched. Terry Dodson, consistently one of my favorite artists. Jeff Lemire is a great writer, and the Teen Titans are childhood favorites of mine. And it's this, like, Wolfman Perez Teen Titans, which is the Teen Titans I grew up on.
Right.
This is the, out of all the Earth One books, this is the one I'm definitely have been the most excited about.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be, like, unique in the way that it's going to be a different origin than you're, you know, going to be used to seeing.
Right. These guys aren't being recruited by, you know, the classic Teen Titans, like the sidekicks. This is, you know, these are the Titans who came later.
Right, right. So this is how they form their team if there were no sidekick. So as opposed to Superman Earth One, which was a good read, but it was, you know, you had a Brainiac type villain in that story, and you had, you know, your classic Superman origin story, which, you know, if you are a Superman fan, you know, there's twists on it, but it was, you know, basically what you got. Same thing with Batman Earth One. You know, it was Batman's origin story, but with a new twist.
And yeah, they like took off Alfred's arms.
Right. So it was, I mean, both are great and, you know, totally worth reading. And I actually suggest people go read them. You know, they both have great art and great writers on them. And but this seems like the biggest departure probably from what you know of as the Teen Titans. Even yeah, and, they're and familiar.
If people are looking to save money on it, the you know, the list price on this, if you buy this in the comic book store, is $23. Amazon has it for $17.36 in print, but both Amazon has it for its Kindle edition and then also on Comixology for only $15. So that's 35% off the print price right there if you're going to buy it digitally.
Right.
Well, $15 for that, $5 for Multiversity, and Dave, that looks like a fun week of comics.
Yeah.
All for less than a couple of pennies less than $25, but then that would cost you buying the latest issue of Fantastic Four by James Robinson and Leonard Kirk.
Oh, which I can't do because of the cliffhanger from last issue was so good.
Is this the final issue coming up, or are we still got a little more to go?
I think we have a little more to go.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I got to look at the solicit. If it's the final issue, it should say the final issue.
Right.
They usually say things.
Yeah, in like all bold.
Final issue, collector's item.
Yeah. We'll be relaunched in 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and Leonard Kirk's done every issue of art of this, right? He hasn't had a fill-in, has he?
There might have been one fill-in.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like this is not the last issue, but they are back in their blue costumes.
And, yeah.
James Robinson had been tweeting about that a lot over the past month or so.
So, yeah, everybody was not enjoying the red costumes. I like the design of the red costumes. I would prefer the coloring to be blue.
Yeah, I like the red costumes too. I just didn't like the redness of them. But then, like, I thought it was cool when the Human Torch had a red costume back in the 70s, but that made sense. He was the Human Torch.
Right.
Yeah, it went with the whole, like, being on fire. So I think it would be cool if the Human Torch found a way to, like, burn hotter and became, like, a blue torch.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about that for a little bit.
You just blew my mind.
So the Fantastic Four this week, they are all going to... They all blew themselves.
Oh, Arrested Development.
Thought you'd appreciate that one. yeah, the blue is back. And so, yeah, I think the last issue might be January. Don't quote me on that, but I have a feeling it's January.
Right. Yeah, so...
Yeah, don't quote the guy who's actually not reading the title right now.
I do have a feeling that this does... I think I said last time we talked about this that this will play into the Secret Wars of the summer.
Yeah, that's exciting. And you had mentioned that 2 weeks ago, that was your theory. Yeah, we keep getting new information about Secret Wars. Not much information, just like the teasingest of teasers.
Right.
Yeah. Another announcement about a previous event being re-released in association with Secret Wars, and it looks like those will all be one-shots. And then today Marvel released the poster for Secret Wars, which is, you know, a bunch of characters, basically 616 and Ultimate Universe fighting each other, which was their booth mural at their Comic-Con. So I was like, oh, you're releasing something that thousands of people took pictures of it here in Comic-Con.
Right.
Yeah. But back to the weekly releases for a minute. We have Justice League number 36 coming out, and this is part two of the Amazovirus. I read part one, and it was awesome. I definitely recommend people picking this up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just purchased a couple of the reduced priced issues on Comixology, so I will be I'll be reading them pretty soon. I have a whole plan here. I'm going to be reading all. I'm going to be catching up on all the books up to the point of where all the books turned over to Future's End, and then I'll read them in the while I'm reading all of Future's End. So
gotcha. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you really do. You are the like mastermind assassin of the Comixology price drop.
Yeah, that's how I roll. You know, yeah. Like I'll pick my couple books that I really want to read this week, and then the others I actually like keep a list. I'm like, okay, I got my eye on you.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know what books are hitting. Like, usually, like, they're like, hey, we have a price drop. And I'm like, oh, let me browse through here. And you're like, well, I can tell you already what's on there. Well, at least, like, what you're interested that's on there.
Right, right. So, it's, you know, I get to experience the excitement of Wednesday twice.
You're like, oh, this book's out. Nice. I can't wait to read it in 2 months.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, this book's out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm the same way with a lot of Marvel titles now because of the Marvel Unlimited subscription, where I'm like, oh, man, I really want to read, like, say, Avengers Undercover, the sequel to Avengers Arena, mm-hmm. which I'm enjoying. And there's 3 issues of it now on the Marvel app. And and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to read this, like, 6 months from now when they add this in. And now, and because of that, like every Marvel comic that hits the stands, I'm like, do I really want to buy this? If it's Ms. Marvel, yes. If it's Hawkeye, yes. If it's a lot of other Marvel series, then I'm like, I can actually wait this out.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way I've been with the Fantastic Four and Invaders.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, so you've been jumping on those when they come out.
And the same thing is Multiversity.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Multiversity is like one of the few books where I'm like, okay, day this comes out, I need to buy this.
Yeah, and it's funny because that's like a super high price point, but I read it like 3 times and get new stuff out of it each time, so I feel like it's worth the money.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true, and you'd mentioned that before, and I feel like just to talk to you about Multiversity, I need to read it a couple of times because, for one, you've gotten an amazing memory for comics that have come out decades ago, especially Grant Morrison comics, which you've reread a couple of times too, where I'm like, okay, I got to read this book like 3 times just so I can like sit in the same room as Dave.
Right, right.
I'm trying to convince Nick Doyle to come on the podcast right now, but he just turned me down. He said he's at work, and I'm like, so. He was texting me. I'm like, hey, why don't you just jump in the podcast right now? And he's like, I'm at work. I'm like,
I heard a ding in my on my microphone and I was, or on my headset, and I was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, I'm gonna. I'm actually gonna mute out of him so that we could. I wasn't sure if you heard those dings.
I did. I was like, "What's going on?" What's going
on? I was actually with Ali. I was like,
from your Grant Morrison conversation.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah, and it's funny because it was distracting me too, and I was like, "Man, I hope what I'm saying makes sense." Because Dave's looking at me like, "What are you talking about?" It turns out you're just distracted by the same noise I was. I just closed that window. So, Nick, sorry if you're not going to come on the podcast, we're not going to be distracted by you.
Yeah, Nick.
Now, the final thing coming out this week that I'm excited for will not be on the comics rack at your local comic book store, but might be wherever they keep the toys, whether that's a toy aisle or, you know, toy pile, like just right by the register. The first figure in the Batman, new Batman Adventures action figure line is coming out. I remember buying this figure when it came out originally because this was when they changed up the costumes for all the characters, when they kind of like relaunched the show when it became like the Batman Superman hour.
Right. Actually, it was before the Batman Superman.
No, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was they gave him like a black. It was like the No Man's Land costume with the pouches, no more oval.
Right.
He went black and gray instead of blue and gray. And I loved this figure when it came out, and I knew I wanted to buy it because I knew that they would only release the figure once, and then everything else would be like Arctic Attack Batman and like Undersea Adventure Batman. And like they never seemed to give you just a normal Batman again in those lines.
Right, yeah. This costume change is signified when the Batman cartoon went from Fox to the WB, which is now the CW.
Oh, that's right. For some reason, I thought it was always, you know, in New York City, Channel 11. But you're right. I guess it did start on Fox, which was Channel 5 here in New York, and then switched to 11, which was the WB.
Right. And this is much more like Batman's original costume, except, you know, trading out the blue for black.
Yeah, and I don't know what the feeling is in the community of fans of the animated series. I actually like this costume much better than the one that he started with on the animated series.
Oh yeah, you know, I really think that like they really streamlined even more from the original look of the series, and they kind of streamlined that look when they went to the Superman series. And they just kind of caught Batman up with that when they moved him over to the WB.
Gotcha.
And I forgot what I was gonna say.
While you're thinking that, I'll say this about this action figure. Unlike those figures that came out in the 90s for the old Batman cartoon, this one has more than 5 points of articulation. Like, we've got elbows that turn and bend, the wrists move, the knees bend, and the hips move. It looks like both outward and forward. The waist moves. The way the cape is, I don't know if, like, the shoulders are poseable, but they might be a little bit.
Yeah, you could, if you are into posing your action figures, this will be great for you.
Yeah, and they're also coming out with Mr. Freeze, Catwoman, and Two-Face in the first line.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really cool that they're coming out with a Catwoman figure because I feel like all the Catwoman figures that line came out with were really, like, they always felt like they were going to break apart.
Yeah, yeah. There was a weird thing. I don't know what it was in the whole 90s toy line in general. Like, whenever they would make a female figure, they always made them just... oddly sculpted, like, because I remember when the first Storm figure was released for the X-Men toy line, and she had like her, you know, her legs were akimbo, like her hips were like super wide, it was just like a weirdly posed figure.
Yeah, and all the female figures usually were like really sparse, you know, like you would never find the April O'Neil. I remember like searching forever when I was a kid for a Beverly Crusher to complete my Next Generation set.
Yeah, that's true. Female figures were usually what were known as the short-backed figures, and there was only like one per case,
right,
when other figures would have two or three per case. But yeah, that's totally true. And now I guess in these new assortments, I don't know if they still do that, or if it's like, well, I guess something like this, you're just ordering it individually.
Right.
Yeah. But... it's just cool that like sculpting technology and the design of action figures has really progressed a lot since these old Batman figures are out. And this is also bigger too. Those old figures were 3 3/4 inches or maybe 4 inches. This one is 6 1/4 inches, like more in line with the Marvel Legends size of figures.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're all around 6 inches. The Batman's only 5 1/2 inches. He's a little shorter than a couple of... Oh, no, Catwoman's going to be 5 1/2 inches. Batman's 6 6 1/4 inches. I guess they're actually doing it to scale since Batman is taller than Catwoman.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested to see how Killer Croc looks and how big he is.
Yeah, definitely. Now, what have you read this week?
Well, over the past couple of weeks, I've been reading a lot, actually. So I'll kind of give you a quick overview of what I read.
Sounds great.
So I read Elektra by Brian Michael Bendis, and I think it was Chuck Austin. The covers were by Greg Horn. It was okay. Whoever the artist was looked like they were like drawing off of action figures. Everybody looked stiff and weird.
I'm trying to remember. This is a series from like the early 2000s, right?
Right.
It's
the early 2000s. It's set in between. He wrote this in between his first run on Daredevil and then when he comes back to Daredevil.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I'd never read his Elektra. I'd read a lot of his Daredevil and I read Alias, but I never read his Elektra.
And then I read some more Ultimate Team Up, the team up with Spider-Man, Punisher, and Daredevil, which was really good. It had awesome artwork by Straczynski, I think. No.
Is it Bill Sienkiewicz who did that?
Sienkiewicz, that's it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh yeah, that's a great issue. The art is very scratchy, but so like moody and terrific.
Yeah, those were three great issues. Then I read a team up with the Fantastic Four.
Love that issue. That's Allred, right?
No, it's not Allred. It's somebody else.
No, is that the Jim Mahfood issue?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great issue too.
And it's very like it's funny you were saying this is out of continuity because it's not the Fantastic Four you see when the Ultimate Fantastic Four is introduced, but right. It totally reads out of continuity.
Yeah,
because they're running through the Marvel offices and stuff like that. So
yeah,
and
it was just so much fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. Those were three great issues. I also read Secret Origins, issues 2 through 5, which covered a bunch of DC superheroes.
And that's of the new series, right? Like the new 52 Secret Origins?
Right, right. So the Batman origin was pretty decent. Again, like, you know Batman's origin, so it's kind of like
yeah.
Aquaman was great. Starfire was pretty good. Green Lantern was meh. Batwoman was meh. I didn't even know Batwoman's origin, and this I wasn't interested. Red Robin was okay. Harley Quinn was great. And that is by the team who's on Harley Quinn right now.
So Amanda Connor did that story?
Yes, yes.
Nice.
Green Arrow was okay, and then Damian Wayne Robin they had, and that was an awesome issue.
Really?
Yeah.
Who worked on that one?
I believe it was Peter Tomasi.
Okay. Yeah, he's got such a handle on that character.
Yeah. Cyborg was pretty good. Red Hood was actually pretty entertaining, and that was written by Scott Lobdell, so I was like, what? Because I'm not usually a big fan.
I hear that.
Mara was great, too. So, I feel like when they get into the like lesser known characters, it kind of there's a little more room to do some cool stuff, it's an interesting read.
It's funny when you said Mara, I thought you said Marrow, this you know D-list X-Men character, and I was like Marrow, what?
Did they sell him to DC?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I hope DC did not pay money for the rights to publish Marrow. Easily one of the five worst X-Men ever.
Yeah, the bad deal, DC. Like the new 52 Marrow.
Yeah. Oh my God. I don't even want to know what that would be.
And then I finished my week up with some Jeff Lemire. I read the final issues of his Green Arrow minus the Future's End story, and he really wrapped that run up great, and I can't wait till he starts Hawkeye.
Nice.
And I read Essex County by Jeff Lemire, and that was his first few books published by Top Cow, and it's fantastic. If you liked Sweet Tooth or any of his books, non-superhero books, I would highly suggest it. And it's so quiet and moody, and it's just like the little moments in between what people are saying really shine in this series. And it's no wonder DC scooped him up to do Sweet Tooth after he published this. It's just an amazing piece of work.
That's awesome. You gotta check that out. Yeah, it sounds like you read a lot. I actually have not read that much. I read the new issue of Witches, which is this, you know, the second issue of the new Scott Snyder and Jock series. And like I said after the first issue, man, Scott Snyder scares me. I recommend if you read Witches number 2, definitely read Witches number 1 first, because it's a lot of, it ties heavily into what happened in the first issue, which you may not have read in a month. But it's great. Like, this is, man, the guy writes really spooky comics.
Yeah, I heard he just was on Word Balloon this week.
Oh, nice.
He's the whole episode. Usually John Sintrus does like two or three people, but it was all about witches, and he touched on some Batman things in the beginning, but the end half is mostly about witches, and it sounds like a spooky spooky story. And he was talking about how he came up with it, and it was just about like his own fears about, you know, being a father and having kids and stuff. And so it's a really great interview. I suggest people go listen to it. But it definitely made me want to go read some of this.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up in that interview about him talking about his own fears about being a father and stuff. And that definitely comes into play in the second issue, where it's basically two parents who are having, you know, something bad is happening to their teenage daughter. And they basically, the characters, in my opinion, are just talking about Scott Snyder's own fears on being a parent. And he has a great analogy to being a parent, where he talks about, like, it's basically taking a like a vital organ out of your body and putting it out into the world and being like, okay, go interact with the world. And like, when what you really want to do is keep that vital organ inside you so that people can't mess with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And and I'm probably doing this analogy a terrible disservice, because it's written much more beautifully in Witches number 2. But I was like, wow, that's parenthood right there.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a great series. I think if you are reading Scott Snyder's Batman, you need to pick up this series too, because it's not superheroes, but it's awesome.
I can't wait to read that. I think I'll probably pick it up, you know, in its first trade.
Yeah, it's usually the first Image trade is a cheap trade too. Like, you can get the first 4 or 5 issues of a series at a fraction of what it would have been cover price.
Right. And I know I have a hard time reading things week by week with some of these more in-depth stories as opposed to some fun superhero stories. So I usually wait around for that. Like, I'm waiting to for Annihilator to kind of wrap up its first story arc, if that's an ongoing. I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know if that's an ongoing or a mini.
But, because... Yeah, I get like forgetful from month to month, and like you
said, definitely.
You reread Witches 1 before you read Witches 2 is probably very helpful.
Yeah, as I was reading Witches 2, I was like, I have to go back and read Witches number 1. I was like, I don't understand what's going on. Right. And then after reading Witches number 1, I was like, okay, this makes more sense now. And I even thought to myself, I kind of should be buying this in trade and not individually.
Right, yeah.
What's cool, though, is he has good text pieces at the end of each issue, which is like a nice bonus for the reader, similar to, you know, how Brubaker would do with Criminal and have like a thing about pulp characters that he researched. But this is just more like Scott Snyder's personal journals and stuff and about writing that issue.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of like the LiveJournal blogs that Kieran Gillen will do for all of his comics, except it's actually in the comic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. I know a lot of writers do that where they have you that's like their incentive for buying these single issues. And that's a really cool like add-on if you're going to stick with the series and not wait for trade. I think that's a cool way to like get people coming in month to month. But I know like Sarah and I will watch a TV show and we'll sit down the next week to watch that TV show and we'll be like, what happened last week? So, I mean, like month to month, I'm like, what?
That's really funny. And speaking of TV shows and, you know, watching them week to week, you had complained previously that there was nowhere to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1.
Right.
And so I'm happy to tell you, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1 should be on Netflix the same day that this podcast drops.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
I believe this right now, Tuesday night, you can... After you finish, everyone finishes listening to this podcast, they can go to their Netflix device-enabled devices, and they should be able to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1.
And I'm going to do it because, you know, I wasn't a big fan of the first couple episodes of that.
Right.
I kind of dropped off, and, we bought a house and got married this year, so it was kind of busy. So I didn't have time for that kind of stuff or all of my entertainment stuff that I'd like to consume. And
right.
So I don't know if you're caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I just watched the latest one.
No, I'm actually a little behind, believe it or not.
And they were talking about Coulson coming back from the dead, and I'm like, this was explained last season. What's going on? I don't know. Damn you, Marvel!
Yeah, I will say this. Season 1, I watched the entire season. I enjoyed the entire season. But there's definitely a jump in quality for the better right after Captain America: The Winter Soldier came out, because S.H.I.E.L.D. tied directly into it, and like just the intensity and the scripts just got much better, because it wasn't just like a villain of the week. It was like, now we have this ongoing saga that we have to fight against.
Right, right. Yeah, and I wanted to see, you know, they had Deathlok on, they had... what's her name from Thor?
Sith.
Sith. That's right.
That was a fun episode. Yeah, the Thor tie-in episode was great because that tied into Thor: The Dark World. It was basically like them cleaning up after Thor.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. And that was actually the Sith episode was one of my favorite episodes of the series.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited to watch this now. So I've been catching up on Walking Dead, and now I'll be catching up on this from last year too. So
nice. And now the other thing that we were going to talk about this week is DC has released the solicitations and covers to Futures End number 40 to 43, and this looks like this is going to play heavily into Blood Moon, or Convergence, I mean, or Convergence.
It's Convergence. I think their Blood Moon is an in-story name for... what's going on with Convergence. But yeah, Brainiac is featured heavily on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah, we have like what looks like a computerized Bleed either spewing from his mouth or being sucked into the ship's mouth.
Right.
And it's in that Bleed where the most interesting things take place, because we've got classic Donna Troy, you know, with her starry outfit, like post-Dark Star Donna Troy.
Yes, the Donna Troy post-Infinite Crisis, I believe? Or
yes.
Well, yes, yeah, because that's when she was resurrected after graduation day, Young Justice Titans.
Right, where she was killed by, like, a robot Superman or something. That was not a good comic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what looks like Dark Knight Returns Batman and Superman in his red and, you know, with his underwear on the outside. Which it looks like the cover of Crisis Infinite Earths number 7 that Superman posed, just without him holding Supergirl.
Yeah, so I think this all leads to March, I believe, when all these issues end. We're going to see the end of Earth 2, World's End, Earth, and then New 52, Future's End. And I think Batman Eternal is stopping then too, and that's when we're going to see convergence happen.
Gotcha.
So I think that you're going to see the two weekly series, Earth 2 World's End and the New 52 Future's End, play into convergence. I don't know about Batman Eternal. I think they might just be putting a bookmarker there, you know, just for the sake of it, because they're moving their offices at the same time convergence is going on.
Ah, so that's like the behind the scenes information of, you know, like why this event is taking place that is basically like derailing, you know, the entire New 52 publishing schedule.
Right. It kind of gives the editors a break. So, you know,
gotcha.
Hold off on the other books. Let's put out this event, and you know, it'll give us time to move and stuff. And so,
right.
And it also lines up with the 30th anniversary of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh, does it? Yeah, that's fascinating. I didn't know that. And so, yeah, Convergence looks cool. Ali and I talked about it a lot last week. You know, that and Bloodlines. You missed the whole Bloodlines podcast.
Oh, you know, I listened and I was like, oh my gosh, you're getting Loose Cannon's information all wrong. He changes color.
So he's not just purple Blanca? He's like any color Blanca?
He's any color Blanca.
Oh, so he'd even be like normal color green Blanca.
I don't know if the Loose Cannon turned green.
Oh, come on!
I think then he would just be too close to the Hulk.
Yeah, then he'd be too close to Blanca, who is clearly modeled after.
Blanca Hulk?
Yeah. Like that is. I was like, that is recolored Blanca. Come on.
Yes.
Come on, 90s DC artist who designed this. Put down your Street Fighter II controller and get to work.
It was Lee Motor who was the artist on Legion post Zero Hour, and who co-created Stargirl with Jeff Johns.
Ah, no way. Interesting.
Yeah. And the writer was Jeff Loeb.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, we could have used you last week, because you would have given us like facts about Bloodlines instead of us just, you know, misremembering stuff.
I don't know. The misremembering stuff sounds way more fun than...
You're like, this is how Bloodlines happens. Like, whatever. This is what I thought about it, looking at the cover and then walking away.
Right.
I was like, butterfly aliens create create superheroes.
I was bummed after listening to the podcast. I was like, I want to read some Bloodlines, and a majority of my comics are at my parents' house, which after we redo our basement, I think they're like, you need to get them out of here.
Wow.
in a nice way.
Okay.
They'll be coming to my house, and I was like, oh man, I'd like to read some Bloodlines, and Comixology does not have any Bloodlines.
Surprise, surprise.
Well, you know, like, the one thing I did like about the annuals in DC in the 90s is they always were like big events, or
yes,
something big happened in them. And, like, I found out there was a lack of annuals on Comixology, or DC's offering of their books. They haven't put out any annuals, no Eclipso annuals, no Year One annuals, no, you know. And I love those guys, and the Armageddon 2001 annuals. They were all like, I always made sure to read them because they like seemed like they kind of mattered, you know.
Yeah, and even if they didn't kind of matter, they were usually like a themed event that was a lot of fun.
Right. Yeah. So I was bummed because I was like, those are usually one and done good stories. Or at least fun stories, even if, you know, they had goofy characters like Bloodlines or, you know, what have you.
So it's funny how you, like, backpedaled when you realized you were talking about Bloodlines. You were like, yeah, they were like one and done, good stories. Or, you know, stories.
Or stories, you know.
Or, you know, Bloodlines. But it's funny, I can't fault you for looking. After the podcast, I decided to look, too. And was surprised that there were no Bloodline stories up on Comixology.
Right.
Like, I figured, like, the even at least the first appearance of Hitman would be there.
Well, they have that in there. They do offer the first Hitman trade, which does encompass that Demon Annual. But yeah, you know, I enjoyed the Flash Annual, which introduced Argus, Mark Waid. That was a really good story, and he had a miniseries after that, which had art by Phil Hester, which was great.
And also, love Phil Hester.
It was also written by Mark Waid, so that was a really cool miniseries. So there you go. Some more Bloodlines. You know, we can see how long we keep this Bloodlines conversation going.
Okay, so I got to go. but seriously, before we go, I just want to make one more announcement. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you've no doubt heard Nick Doyle fill in for Dave before. Nick Doyle's in a band. They're called the Silver Bells. They are Charleston's number one Christmas music band. They might be America's number one Christmas music band. And they have a Kickstarter out right now. Nick has written all new Christmas songs. They're putting out a record on vinyl and also digital download. And if you just go to Kickstarter.com, search for the Silver Bells, you can contribute to that Kickstarter, get this music. And if you're in Charleston, I believe they do like an annual like Christmas show too. I'm not sure at what bar they do that at, but they're on Facebook obviously, and you can look for them there. I highly recommend. If you read Nick's Gotham recaps and you want to thank him for those hilarious things, contribute to this Kickstarter because he really wants to get this record made.
Yeah, and he has a great voice.
Yeah, he does have a great voice. He was the ceremony musician at my wedding.
This is true. And yeah. I've sung karaoke with him.
That's true also. Yeah. Nick usually is one of the best karaoke singers in the room anytime I've been to karaoke with him. And that's both a good thing, and it's like a double-edged sword, because I'm like, wow, he sings so well. And then I think to myself, wow, I don't want to go next. so if guys, if you can contribute to that Kickstarter, it'd mean the world to me, and I'm sure Nick too. So Dave, welcome back. I'm so glad that you're back. I won't lie, I was momentarily worried that you were going to be like, listen, man, I'm married now. I got no time for podcasting.
I'm married. I'm through with comics and podcasts.
Yeah. Grow up, Billy.
Nope.
Yeah, it was a discussion in my household. It was like, so is Dave coming back to the podcast? You know, he's married now. I'm like, I'm married to you. This was a discussion with my wife. And I was like, I'm pretty sure Dave's coming back.
Did she go, hint, hint?
Yeah. The good thing is she'll never listen to this. Love you, Julie. So... Guys, don't rat me out to my wife, please, if you're listening to this episode. And enjoy your Tuesday night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Night.